souls like ourselves to occupy. And it's stated he's not inventing them, he's not creating them, he's making use of forms that are supplied by Krishna. Like Krishna gives the plan, Krishna gives the ingredients, and Brahma, making use of the plans given by Krishna and making use of the elements that have been supplied by Krishna in the primary creation. He engages in the secondary creation. He's got the plan, he's got the ingredients, but still it takes a great deal of effort to do that. I mean, even if you have the plan for something and you have all the ingredients, all the necessities, you've still got to do it, and that takes a great effort. Like, you know, somebody could give you a plan for the house and say, here are all the bricks, here's all the lumber, here's the concrete. You've got everything, you've got the plan, still you have to execute it. And that requires a lot of intelligence. And that's why Brahma is, Lord Brahma is praying to Krishna for that intelligence. He's praying for the ability to carry out that task. So these plans for the different kinds of material bodies for the conditioned souls to occupy, they're sometimes called bijas or seeds. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Aham bija prada pitaha, I am the seed-giving father of all living things. And it's stated in a few chapters ago or a few verses ago that Brahma takes these seeds. It's like he's got the plans of the bodies in seedling form, and he simply distributes them, and then they manifest. So the thing is that's being stated here in this verse is that this happens again and again and again in the same way. Say, during a day of Brahma, which lasts for 4,320,000,000 years, life is manifest in the universe, or the universe says, because there are many of them. And during the nights of Brahma, which also lasts 4,320,000,000 years, the life forms are not manifest. Everything is dormant. You know, the conditioned souls, they go into the body of Garbhadakshay Vishnu until the next day begins. And when the next day begins, they're put into the same forms they existed in when the previous day of Brahma ended. So that means the forms continue to exist in Vishnu or Krishna. They continue to exist even when the conditioned souls are in a dormant state. So when it's time for the next day of Brahma to begin, the plans for the same kinds of bodies are still there. And this is a different idea than either creationism or the modern evolution theory. It's the forms always exist. They're eternally there in the mind of Krishna, so that when universes are manifested and it's necessary for conditioned souls to have bodies, the plans are already there. They're always existing. You know, so according to the theory of creationism, you know, God has to think and put together these forms. But actually, they're coexisting with God. God's eternal. These forms of material bodies are eternal in the sense that the plans for them always exist. And the same plans are manifest again and again and again and again by the force of the time factor, which is stated here as perpetual and eternal. So, and the same kinds of activities are also repeated again and again and again and again. Janma Mrityu Jaravyadhi Dukkha Dosha Anudarshanam. Birth, death, old age, disease, it's the same again and again and again for the conditioned souls. And not only birth, death, old age, and disease, but the different kinds of activities that they carry out are repeated again and again and again. You know, there's the story of Narada Muni. You know, in a previous day of Brahma, a previous kalpa, you know, it stated how he was the son of a maidservant, and you know, she would render service to travelers who came through the town or the area where they were living. And you know, some sages came there and they stopped there for the rainy season, and she was assisting them, and her son, who became Narada Muni, was also doing this. But, you know, she died by a snake bite, so the child was left alone, and he decided to follow the advice of the sages, and he left civilization and stated he was walking past all the pastures and the villages and the towns and the factories and the mines. And Srila Prabhupada states in his purport, you know, that these activities, you know, we think, you know, we've had the Industrial Revolution, and for the first time ever, there's factories and highways and mines and everything. Srila Prabhupada said, no, you know, in a previous day of Brahma even, the same activities were going on. So civilizations have risen and fallen many times in the history of life in the material universes, you know, again and again. So these are stereotype activities. They happen again and again and again. But as so some of the conditioned souls get tired of that, you know, temporary sense gratification in different kinds of material bodies. And Krishna reciprocates with those who are looking for something higher than the activities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending and various forms of life, you know, animal, plant, fish, insect, human. And among the millions of different kinds of life forms, the human form of life is considered the most valuable because it's in the human form of life that it's possible to transcend material existence, to get out of the cycle of birth and death. So this human form of life is meant for a higher purpose than simply eating, sleeping, mating, and defending as the same, in the same way as the animals exist. So this universe, it actually has a purpose. You know, the material scientists think it's just an accident. But that particular philosophy results in a certain type of life. Asatyam apratishtam te jagat ahur anishvaram. There's a certain type of philosopher, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that believes there is no God in control. Everything is just happening by material combination. So everything's ultimately, they would say, illusory in the sense that not exactly how the Mayavadis say it's like that. You know, the Mayavadis say, well, there is some kind of ultimate reality, but it's impersonal. It's just one impersonal effulgence. And if we think there are individuals, if we think there's a material world, that's totally an illusion. But the Vaishnava philosophy is, no, it's not an illusion. It's temporary. It's occasional, but it's not an illusion. You know, it's like in the modern society, they have what they call virtual reality systems, which means you get put into an alternate reality, but that reality is produced by a real computer that actually exists. And you have a real headset, virtual reality headset, that allows you to participate in that virtual reality. So there's something that's producing this virtual reality system of the material universe. It's not an illusion like a dream. It's actually produced by the energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we're not just some illusory type of individual. We're actually eternally individual conscious selves that are meant to exist in harmony in a relationship of loving devotional service to the Supreme Conscious Self. So it's not all just some big illusion that'll just go away and everything will be one undifferentiated substance. No, there's actual, there's an actual difference, you know, between, we're individuals because that's our nature as eternal spirit souls. So, but this universe that we're in, although it's temporary, it has a purpose. And the purpose is to educate the conditioned souls so that they're qualified to exist on the spiritual level of reality on one of the Vaikuntha planets, or in the highest Vaikuntha planet, Goloka Vrindavan. Oh, it's getting late. so that Well, actually, the universe has a dual purpose. It allows the conditioned souls to pursue sense gratification apart from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. You know, the soul is by nature an eternal servant of Krishna, Jivaras Rupahoi Krishnera Nityadas. That's the constitutional nature of the soul, and only that will really satisfy the soul. But some souls desire to exist independently of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which means they want to be independent enjoyers, which is not really possible because they're not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they imagine they could have that position. And in the spiritual world, it's not really possible to do that. You can only exist as a loving, willing servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So for such souls, there has to be another place where they can act out their desires to be independent enjoyers. In other words, they want to be imitation gods. So Krishna says, okay, you want to try to enjoy independently of me? I'll give you a place where you can do that. And that's the material world. So in the material world, we're all like little Poundrikas. King Poundrika was a king who existed 5,000 years ago, and he thought, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he made kind of some artificial arms, forearms, carrying a conch and a disc and a flower and a lotus flower and a club. And he sent a messenger to Krishna in Dwarka saying, I've heard you're imitating me, you're claiming to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he gave him an injunction. You know, like sometimes here they give, in the material world, you know, somebody will give a cease and desist order to someone. So he sent a messenger to Krishna and says, I want you to stop this imitation, give up those weapons that you're holding. And so Krishna went and confronted him and destroyed him in a battle. So we're all kind of like that. We're like Poundrikas trying to imitate the position of the Supreme Enjoyer. But even so, Krishna remains merciful. He says, okay, if you want to try to be the Supreme Enjoyer, here's a place where you can do it. And but if you want to come back to your constitutional position, if you want to be an enjoyer in cooperation with me, then I'll give you that opportunity. It's totally up to you. If you want to remain in the position of trying to enjoy independently of me, and you want to have all different kinds of bodies where you can attempt to do that, well, you'll be in a cycle of birth and death, and all your plans to enjoy will be smashed ultimately. But if that's what you want to do, go ahead. I'll give you all facility to do it. But if you get tired of that at any point and you want to come to your natural condition of being in a world where you're eternal, you're full of knowledge and full of ever-increasing bliss, you can do that. And I'll give you all facility for that. I'll give you the Vedic knowledge, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, so you can learn who you are and what you should be doing. I'll come myself even to instruct you. I'll send my representative, bona fide spiritual master, the instructing spiritual master, the initiating spiritual master. I'll give you the association of others who are also attempting to revive their original consciousness. I'll do all that. And he does it not once, but as we hear here in this verse and purport, again and again and again and again. So I'll stop there. Brigapati Prabhu.
Thank you for a very interesting and comprehensive class. My question is, during your class, you mentioned about the rising and falling of civilizations, how it's happening again and again. I was just wondering, does the fossil record support that? You'd be the person to ask that question to. It's kind of, I have the impression that the fossil record seems to show like a, you know, just going up. It doesn't, it's kind of, but I'm a layman.
Well, for any type of civilization to exist, the first thing is there have to be human beings. You know, whether you have a so-called low level of culture or high level of culture, first thing is there has to be some type of human being there. And there is evidence that human beings have been present for vast periods of time on Earth. And, you know, that, you know, there are different kinds of evidence. That's one thing we have to consider. For, you know, evidence, you know, there's a Sanskrit word for it. It's called pramana. And there are three principal pramanas or kinds of evidence. One is called pratyaksha, which means physical things that you can perceive with your senses. and then there's another type of evidence. It's called anumana, which means logical inference. You know, if I hear the sound of a motor outside, think, oh, there may be a motorcycle outside. So, you know, you don't perceive it directly, but, you know, you infer, oh, there, because of this factor or that factor, there must be something else. Now, the problem with those kinds of evidence is the senses are limited and imperfect. You know, they don't perceive everything, and they can also become illusion. You know, it's the same with our logic. You know, we may correctly infer something, but we make mistakes also. We become illusion, or we can become cheated, deceived, or cheat others. So those types of evidence are not very perfect. Now, according to the Vedic epistemology, there's another type of evidence, the Shabda Praman, which means testimony by authorized sources. Like if somebody who is very qualified has seen something, then you can accept the testimony of that person as evidence. And the superior type of evidence is the evidence that comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who knows everything perfectly. And that evidence originally exists in the form of transcendental sound, which is recorded in the Vedic literature. So the Shabda Praman, evidence from the statements of Shastra, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, other bona fide Shastras, is the best evidence. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it directly states in the sixth canto, chapter 4, text 1, that human beings have been manifest since the beginning of the day of Brahma, the beginning of the Kalpa, which is a couple billion years ago. So for a devotee, the statements of Shastra are evidence. You know, Lord Ram existed in the Treta Yuga, you know, which is about 2 million years ago. I mean, modern science says, you know, humans like us are an accident of evolution, and we first came into existence less than 300,000 years ago. So they'll say, I mean, of course, here, you know, we're learning, no, we've been here again and again and again over vast periods of time. So as far as evidence goes, for me, a statement from Shastra is evidence. But it doesn't require any proof, or you can't prove or disprove it by material evidence. But for people who accept material evidence, okay, we can provide something, but you know, the best thing is they accept the statements of Shastra as evidence, become Shastra Chakshush. Archita.
Hi, Krishna. Thank you for a wonderful class and answer to Bhagavati's question. But there's also, from the archaeological viewpoint, even within recent history, like going back just 800, 1,000 years ago, evidence that supports this theory of the rise and fall of civilizations, just like Angkor Wat. Angkor Wat, we have heard of that huge Vishnu temple that was hidden in the jungle for hundreds of years. It was accidentally discovered by a Frenchman. But, you know, obviously some locals who lived in that area knew that there was something there. But now they found out it wasn't just that one large temple, but it was a whole city that's larger than London. So here the Europeans were thinking that they were so advanced. They have these big cities like London and Paris. But in the jungles of Cambodia, there was a city hundreds of years ago, 800 years ago, that was larger than their cities. So there is this rise and fall of civilization because human beings destroy what they build. They create, they maintain for some time, and then they destroy, just like we're happening in Europe right now. Without stopping these Russians, they will destroy Ukraine. And someday in the future, you could see nothing but just, you know, basements of buildings. And you think, oh, who lived here? Why? What was this? What happened? Mm-hmm. So their record of history is imperfect. Their conclusions are therefore imperfect. They were rolling along thinking that they were the epitome of existence, that nobody was more advanced, and then they come across civilizations like those in the jungles of Cambodia that were obviously way more advanced. Just the construction of that one temple is still blowing their minds. Angkor Wat. How those stones are so perfectly put together and all the, you know, you've been there, right?
I have.
Yeah, the reliefs on the walls and all that. It's mind-blowing. So, and also in the 12th canto, it supported the fact that so many kings have come on this earth and built empires and disappeared. So the rise and fall of civilization is supported by modern archaeology and also by the statements of Shastra.
Very good. Sachit Anoy.
Thank you, Guru. I want to understand this a little bit better. Maybe I'm confused. You said that the dual purpose of, it has two dual purposes for the creation of this world. And isn't it also that could be another one, or maybe it's included, that the supreme purpose could be that he actually, Krishna, wants to enjoy, because ultimately each living entity is created for his enjoyment. The creation is created for our enjoyment when we actually disobey. So even misusing the free will may appear to be like a, this is my understanding, the overall, just like a game, like a drama. And he comes and he enjoys even while he's here, in his different incarnations. And for us, it's painful. But in a sense, for him, it's just an enjoyment. It's like a game. Can you maybe explain? Or maybe I'm confused.
That's right. And you could say, okay, it's a place where Krishna can do things that he doesn't do in the spiritual world, right? Like, it's stated in terms of Jai and Vijay, that and the purports for that, you know, Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna likes to fight. So, and if there's nobody competent in the material world, he'll send some of his servants from the eternal world to fight with, because he likes to fight. Is that the sort of thing you were talking about?
Yes, but also we can say just any ordinary living entity created also being in the whole plan of Krishna for enjoyment. He comes, we have a relationship with Krishna, mm-hmm. every one of us. And even misusing our free will, we are caught up in the game or the whole drama. Because ultimately that what he creates is everything that he does is for his own enjoyment.
That's your idea, or you've gotten it from some source?
I was thinking two purposes, you say, for two dual purposes. But then I'm thinking, well, above that, or maybe within that, ultimately, it's just an enjoyment. But we see it as a suffering.
I'd like to hear some Shastric evidence for that, or something, for some statement of Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Because sometimes, I mean, maybe there is some basis for it. I'm not sure, but you know, sometimes, you know, a person will say, "It's my leela," you know, to be entangled in birth, death, old age, and disease. It's my leela. And when Srila Prabhupada would hear that, he would not agree with that, oh, it's your leela. So, maybe one of our acharyas has said that, but I'm not aware of it, and I would hesitate to accept it. That's why I was asking, you know, if you had some evidence for it. But yeah, I was thinking in one thing, is there ever a time when there's no conditioned souls who are trying to exist independently from Krishna, and that there would be no need for any material universes? I was thinking that. I never heard it from any statement in Shastra or from one of our acharyas or from Srila Prabhupada, but you know, it's I mean, there are all kinds of things we can speculate about and think about, but to be convinced, you know, I think we need some help, some assistance from Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.